Jason stopped, looking at Clive. "You can't fix dead, can you?" Jason asked. "It never occurred to me to ask."
"Not at our rank," Clive said. "Some gold rank healing effects can bring you back if they're used immediately."
"Like magic CPR," Jason said.
"I don't know what that is," Clive said. "There's also diamond rank, but there are always rumors about diamond rank."
They walked towards the village. Like the others they had visited, there was no one to be seen. The people had holed themselves up as they waited for adventurers to arrive. The buildings were mud brick, with woven reed doors and window shutters. Many of the doors had been scratched into shreds, revealing barriers of stone or metal that had been placed behind them. The people of the Delta were prepared for monsters. Jason loudly announced their presence, and the village mayor came out to meet them. She described the monster, which sounded to Jason like a claw-footed, six-legged crocodile.
"That's a mangrove snatcher, all right," Clive said.
"Is someone hurt?" Jason asked.
"There is," the mayor said. "We're worried because the healers don't make it out here every month. Even if they do come, I don't know if he can last that long. The injury is bad enough, but the infection has set in."
"Best show us then," Jason said. The mayor led them through the village. "I imagine infection would be a problem here in the Delta," Jason said.
"It is," the mayor said. "Do you have healing abilities?"
"I can handle the infection," Jason said. "The injury will take a potion. Unless you can heal injuries, Clive?"
"No," Clive said, shaking his head. "I have some self-healing, but I can't use it on others."
"We can't afford potions," the mayor said. "We could probably put together enough for some healing ointment if you have some."
"Ointment won't get the job done on deep wounds," Jason said. "I've learned that the hard way. I'll probably use a potion, maybe two."
"We really can't afford it," the mayor said.
"We're here to save the day, Madam Mayor. All part of the service." The mayor looked at him, nonplussed.
"You'll just give us a potion?"
"Adventure Society," Jason said, flashing her a smile. "We're here to help." The mayor called out at a house and the barricade was removed from the door. Inside was a man lying on a bed, stripped down to his underwear, with a stained through bandage wrapped around his leg. He was sweat-covered and muttering to himself. Jason winced.
"I'd better get straight onto that."
Jason walked over to the bed, where a woman was dabbing the man's forehead with a wet cloth.
"Excuse me,"
Jason said, as he stood next to her. He held a hand over the injured man and chanted out his spell.
"Feed me your sins."
Red life force shone out from the man, tainted with the yellow and purple colors of a bruise. Those infecting colors rose up from the red light, disappearing into Jason's hand. What remained was the clean red glow of life force, which retracted into that man's body.
"You have cleansed all instances of disease, infection, from human. You have cleansed all instances of disease, sepsis, from human. Your stamina and mana have been replenished. Stamina and mana cannot exceed normal maximum values. Excess stamina and mana are lost."
The injured man took a shuddering breath, then looked about, confused. His eyes became focused, looking at all the people around him.
"Welcome back, mate," Jason said. "I'm Jason, adventurer, raconteur, man about town."
"What?"
Jason pulled a knife from his inventory. It wasn't his fighting knife, but a magically sharp utility knife he had purchased. He dug it under the filthy bandages and cut them away with a single smooth slice. There were deep claw marks underneath that started pulsing out blood immediately. Jason pulled out a healing potion, carefully pouring it into the wound.
"Alchemist mate of mine made this stuff," Jason said. "More effective on external wounds than just chugging it straight down."
The wounds quickly closed up. An iron rank potion was more effective on a normal person than it was on an iron ranker. The fact that it would be longer before they could use another was a middling drawback, which was why many adventurers kept a high rank potion on hand for emergencies. In moments, the open wounds had closed into glaring welts. Jason took out a tin of ointment and handed it to the woman by the bed. "Give him a half hour for the potion to work its way through his system, then use this," Jason instructed. "There won't be a mark left on him."
"We can't afford this," the woman said,
although Jason noted how tightly she clutched the tin.
On the house, Jason said.
Well, on me. This is your house.
Come on, Clive. We've got more villagers to check on.
Something's not right, Jason said.
You mean other than your idea to stake me out covered in meat?
Still with this? It was an early stage of planning. The third and fourth villagers were like the first two, with villagers barricaded inside. Nothing else demanded immediate action, and they turned their minds to hunting the monster. They sat down in the shade of a large tree, Jason on a folding chair from his inventory, Clive on the shell of his rune tortoise familiar, Onslow.
I understand the part about covering me with meat, Clive said. I don't appreciate it, but I understand it. But tethering me to a stake, I'm not going to wander off.
You might, Jason said. I'm sensing resistance to the plan.
I could just pull out the stake.
See, this is the kind of resistance I'm talking about. It's not my fault your world doesn't have goats.
I still don't know what goats are. I'm surprised you didn't want to use Onslow as bait.
I'd never do that to him, Jason said, reaching out to scratch the tortoise under the chin. But when I said something's not right, I meant about these monster attacks.
How so?
How fast is this mangrove snatcher thing?
They attack in short bursts of speed, Clive explained. But if you're talking about overland speed, they're no faster than a person.
Realization crossed Clive's face.
Every village reported daily attacks, he said. There's no way one monster got around to every village in a day. There's more than one monster.
That's what I was thinking.
We need to know how many there are, Clive said. Given the distances, it's at least three or four. It could be more than that. People don't stop when they spot the first monster to check if it brought a friend.
Well, I don't have a way to check how many there are, Jason said, but I should be able to tell once we've got them all.
Oh?
I told you about my quest system, right? I got a quest for this contract, the same as the others.
Quest, contract, mangrove snatcher. A number of villagers have reported being attacked by a mangrove snatcher. Objective, eliminate the mangrove snatcher, threat to the four villagers, 0 of 1.
The objective is to end the mangrove snatcher threat. Once we get the last one, the quest should complete.
That's good, Clive said. Otherwise, we'd be waiting around for days, not knowing if we were finished or not.
Like Jason, Clive had a dimensional space that could store objects. A magical circle appeared in the air, lines and runes glowing with a golden light. In the middle was a murky darkness Clive reached into, pulling out a notebook and pencil.
Your abilities all seem very practical, Clive said as he took notes. There is a theory that the unique outworlder racial gifts are an unconsciously derived mechanism of self-protection, possibly as a reaction to the original body being annihilated.
I'm sorry, what now? Jason asked, his gaze locking onto Clive. What do you mean by the body being annihilated?
You didn't know? Clive asked. It's one of the better-known aspects of outworlder knowledge, because of what we already know about the astral.
Didn't know what? What annihilation?
How much do you know about the astral? Clive asked. The space between worlds.
I read a skill book of astral magic, Jason said. I took it from Landemir Vane.
So basically nothing, Clive said. Those books are all practice, no theory. All right, here we go. If you could encapsulate the cosmos, as in all of everything, your world, my world, the space in between, it would be like a bowl of dumpling soup.
Dumpling soup?
Do they not have dumpling soup on your world? Clive asked. Or do they not have analogies?
We have both, Jason said. We also have smart guys getting punched in the face for running their mouth.
That's rich, coming from you.
I'm a live-by-the-sword, die-by-the-sword kind of guy, Jason said. You either keep your mouth shut or accept that someone's going to put a fist in it from time to time. Clive shook his head.
You're a crazy person. Just listen up, all right? So all the cosmos is a bowl of dumpling soup.
Clive paused, tilting his head in thought.
Now that I'm talking about it, he said, I really could go for some dumpling soup.
I know, right? Jason said, nodding his agreement.
I know a really good place back in the city.
We'll go when we get back, Jason said. Annihilation, the cosmos' soup, remember?
Right. So in this dumpling soup, each world, each physical reality, is a dumpling. Your world, a dumpling. My world, a dumpling. Every world out there, a dumpling. The astral is the soup through which we are all the dumplings. All the worlds are floating.
All right, Jason said. With you so far?
The astral, the soup, is also the source of all magic, Clive said. That's what it is, just magic. Pure, unadulterated, the most fundamental building blocks of reality. Every world, every dumpling, is swimming in it. Some dumplings soak up a lot of the soup, like this world. Our world soaks up the magic, which takes various forms as that magic gets shaped by our physical reality. That's why we have essences, awakening stones, quintessence, monsters, all just appearing out of nowhere.
But my world doesn't have any of that, Jason said.
That means your dumpling soaks up very little of the soup.
So how did I end up here?
All right, think of the soup kind of congealing around a dumpling. That's how you get astral spaces, which are a sort of magical dimension attached to a world.
Like the one that produces all the water that makes this delta.
Exactly like that, Clive said. But not all that congealed magic is as stable as an astral space. It can kind of drift away, especially if someone goes and pokes a hole in the side of the dumpling.
Like a big summoning spell.
Precisely like a big summoning spell, Clive said. Some of that congealed magic can drift off the side of the world, like a tendril, and if it happens to touch another dumpling, a brief, unstable link is formed. In this case, that link was between a world very good at soaking up magic and one that isn't. So my world sucked in a part of yours through that magical link.
How big a part?
Tiny, Clive said. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been the only one to arrive. But that link was never established properly. It was a phenomenon created through random forces, which means a couple of things. One, the link would have collapsed almost immediately.
So no using it to get home, Jason said.
No. The other important thing is that the link wasn't some purpose-built channel designed to transport physical material through the astral. I can't even imagine the kind of astral magic that would take. Gold rank, at the least. Probably diamond.
So?
So you were pulled straight through the deep astral, Clive said. And the thing about the deep astral is that it's just magic, only magic.
You said that?
Yes, but the point is, physical substance can only exist in a physical reality. I said your body was annihilated, but that wasn't exactly accurate. Your body ceased to exist because it went somewhere where the physical substance it was made of cannot exist. That's also why any physical material dragged into the link with you didn't arrive with you.
Ceased to exist? The goddess of knowledge said my body was changed.
Your body didn't change, Clive said. Your body is gone. Not melted away, not blasted into pieces too small to see, just gone. It stopped existing. You must have misunderstood what the goddess told you.
Or she lied.
She wouldn't have done that, Clive said. Lying is one of the core sins of her religion.
She isn't a member of the religion, Jason said. She's the object of it.
Maybe she just told you what you were ready to hear, Clive suggested.
You're telling me that I died, Jason said, pulling things back on topic.
I suppose you did.
Then how am I here?
Well, the body died, but the soul isn't physical, it's magical. Do you know how summoning a familiar works?
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, Clive said, summoning a familiar is like deliberately creating a monster. A chunk of magic is brought into our world and forms a body. What makes it different from a monster is that it also summons a creature from the deep astral. Such entities are purely magical, like a soul. They normally can't exist in physical reality, any more than we can exist in the astral. But they inhabit the body you've made, give it a mind and stability, so it doesn't break down and go berserk.
You're saying that I'm basically a familiar?
Exactly, Clive said, with academic fascination. Your soul came into this world, and like any other chunk of magic, constructed a physical manifestation for itself.
So, my body is the same thing as a monster's, just with a soul to stop it from breaking down?
Yes, Clive said. You're picking this up very well.
Clive's enthusiasm had blinded him to the growing horror on Jason's face. Jason leaned forwards in his chair, head in his hands.
Jason?
Give me a minute, Clive. You kind of dropped a bomb on me.
Oh,
Clive said, realization suddenly hitting.
Sorry about, you know, dying.
Jason sat, head bowed, mind reeling.
Is this why I didn't have hair? Jason?
I said give me a minute, Clive.
Not sure you have a minute, Clive said. I just sensed the monster's aura.
Chapter 70 Rewards. The village was located right on the water. The monster sensed a potential meal out in the open and burst from the water to scramble in the direction of Clive and Jason. It looked like a large six-legged crocodile. Clive, still sitting on the tortoise, pointed at the ground in the path of the rushing monster. He quickly chanted a spell.
Emplace the mark of power.
A rune appeared on the ground, glowing red. The monster ran straight over it, and Clive snapped his fingers. The rune exploded, sending ruptured gobbets of monster raining through the village. Jason's cloak appeared to shield him from the monster remains.
Mind if I loot? Jason asked.
Clive looked at the liberal spattering of monster on his clothes, wiping it off his face.
Sure,
he said, grimacing at the mess. Jason poked at a chunk of flesh.
Would you like to loot, Mangrove Snatcher?
Jason held his nose as the flesh dissolved off his cloak and off of Clive, who was coughing and spluttering.
I can't believe you, Jason asked, giving Clive a flat look.
You mean the mess?
Clive asked.
It was coming right at us.
No, I don't mean the mess, Jason said, and pointing at the small crater left by Clive's spell.
If you can do that, why don't you hunt monsters? I'm really more of a scholar.
I hate to break it to you, Clive, but whatever you call someone with magic landmines, it isn't a scholar.
Landmines?
Clive asked. Jason groaned. Let's just go to the next village. Quest. Contract. Mangrove Snatcher. Objective complete. Eliminate the Mangrove Snatcher threat to the four villages. 1 of 1. Quest complete. 100 Iron Spirit coins have been added to your inventory.
That was the last one, Jason said.
In the end, Jason was the one who ended up playing bait. When not triggered immediately, Clive's rune trap faded away until only special senses could locate it. This made the enthusiastically predatory monsters easy to handle. Jason just stood there as they charged at him, only to die at a snap of Clive's fingers.
It only goes off when you trigger it? Jason asked.
I can set it to trigger when something steps on it, too, Clive said. That seems like it could be dangerous, though.
You're worried about stumbling onto it yourself?
My vision power lets me see magic, Clive said. I can spot it even when it's hidden. The same doesn't go for anyone I'm working with, though.
That's a good power.
It has its weaknesses, Clive said. It takes a few moments to activate and glows bright red when I cast it. Anything other than dumb monsters know to get out of the way.
Good news, Jason said. Fighting dumb monsters is most of what adventurers do.
I will admit to not having a terrible time, Clive said. The smell of dissolving monsters aside, I'm hardly going to start making regular trips to the jobs hall, but if you need a ride out here again, then come find me.
I just might do that, Jason said. Do you have a bag or something?
What for?
I was rewarded 100 coins for the quest, Jason said. You did all the work, so you should get the pay.
That's your ability, Clive said. You keep it.
No dice, mate, Jason said. You do the work, you get the pay.
Half, then,
Clive said, taking a money pouch from his dimensional space.
Use the rest to restock your potion supply.
Sounds fair, Jason said. He withdrew 70 coins from his inventory and dropped them into Clive's bag. I put in half of what I took from the monsters, too. Their task complete, they used the airboat to notify the villagers that the threat had passed. Clive then directed the boat back in the direction of Greenstone.
Hey, Jason called out over the noise of the airboat. Didn't you say something about knowing a good place for dumpling soup?
Yes,
Clive called back.
Yes, I did.
The airboat emerged from the Delta waterways in the late afternoon, approaching the old city Watergate. A distributory running out of the delta led into Old City's canal district, through a massive, portcullised arch. The canal docking area was a bustle of activity. Clive drove their airboat right into a building, which was set up like a submarine dock. It belonged to the Magic Society, and was quiet compared to the brisk goings-on on the canal docks outside.
"I need to get back to the Magic Society campus," Clive said. "I'm going to have so much to do."
Their trip had involved navigating deep into the delta, checking on all the villages, going through them to kill the monsters, going around again to give the all-clear, then finally come back. By the time they arrived back in Greenstone, they had been gone for more than half a week. When he first decided to drag Clive along, Jason had expected him to balk at the rough delta accommodations. He hadn't expected Clive to have grown up in such conditions.
"I'll go make the report to the Adventure Society," Jason said. "You should be able to drop by the jobs hall any time and collect your share of the reward."
Clive requisitioned a small, magic-driven carriage from the Magic Society to take them back to the island, stopping at the Magic Society campus.
"Lunch tomorrow?"
Jason asked as they parted ways.
"Dumpling soup,"
Clive said with a wave. Since Jason had started taking contracts, Rufus, Gary, and Farah had been increasingly busy. They each had their own projects, and in between they were taking bronze-ranked contracts from the jobs hall. One of their key reasons for coming to Greenstone was the chance for some independence, after all. Between the Vane estate contract going wrong and Jason's training, their own adventuring had moved down the list. Now Jason was a full-fledged adventurer, they were back to adventuring themselves. While they were all busy, Jason was seeing a lot less of the trio. He was unsurprised, then, that evening found him alone in his room at the inn. He decided to go out and see if there was anything on at the concert hall, seeing as it was so close. Although there wasn't anything on the scale of the Grand Magical Symphony, there was a string section recital taking place. He thought it might be interesting to see from the main floor, given that he usually watched performances from the Geller's private viewing box. He was looking for a ticket box when Cassandra Mercer had spotted him wandering about.
"Mr. Asano,"
she called out as she approached.
"Miss Mercer," Jason said. "Fancy meeting you here."
"You seem a little lost."
"Well, I've never actually purchased a ticket before. I've been meaning to sign on to the patronage program with the Musical Society, but I've been a bit busy."
"The life of a new adventurer?"
"Mostly," Jason said. "I did spend the afternoon working in a dumpling restaurant."
"You got a job in a dumpling restaurant?"
she asked incredulously.
"I didn't get a job there," Jason said. "I just worked in the kitchen for the afternoon. I wanted to learn to make dumplings with local ingredients."
Cassandra invited him to view the recital from the Mercer family's private box.
"Thadwick won't be there, will he?"
"Thadwick treats culture like catching a cold," Cassandra said. "You can't always avoid it, but you can take precautions."
Jason laughed. Cassandra explained the reason Jason hadn't found the ticket box was that it was on the other side of the building. He had been looking where he usually entered, which he discovered was for patrons, private box holders, and their guest. The patron lounge was a place for concertgoers to engage socially before the performance and during intervals. They took drinks from the long bar and sat down in a pair of comfortable seats. Jason had a tall glass filled with rainbow layers of liqueur, while Cassandra took a neat measure of amber spirits. Jason wasn't used to drawing a lot of attention at such events. He was usually an adjunct to groups with Rufus and Danielle Geller, who were much more interesting to high society mavens. Being the solitary companion to Cassandra Mercer proved very different.
"How is it that you are having an evening out unaccompanied?"
Jason asked. "I have to imagine people falling over themselves to be in your company."
"There's a difference between company and engaging company," she told him. "The men in this town are a little simple for my taste."
"You like a sophisticated gentleman," Jason said.
"Sophisticated is good," Cassandra said. "Complicated is better. As for the gentleman part, I can take it or leave it. What about you, Mr. Asano? What are you looking for in a woman?"
"Evil genius," Jason said, casually.
"Evil genius?"
she asked, eyebrows raised.
"Why not? Smart, confident, assertive, driven. What's not to like?"
"The evil?" Cassandra ventured.
"That could be a problem long term,"
Jason acknowledged. Maybe what I need is a naughty genius. He thought it over for a moment as an impish grin took over his face.
Yeah, he said, voice purring. That sounds exactly right.
As they continued to chat, several people attempted to join their conversation, usually young men. Jason admired Cassandra's ability to send them off with diplomacy and tact.
You're very good with people, he complimented. You are as well.
No, Jason said. I'm good at people. There's a difference, usually in how angry they get once they realize what just happened. She laughed.
Is something odd going on this evening?
Jason asked, looking around the room.
What do you mean?
There's a lot of adventurers here.
Patronage isn't cheap, Cassandra said. People of means tend to be essence users.
I don't mean the attendees, Jason said. There are people in the shadows. He nudged his head in various directions, pointing out the people discreetly placed around the room. Cassandra frowned as she let him lead her gaze.
I didn't notice at all, she said, with self-recrimination. Perhaps I rely too much on my aura sense. All these essence users are aura camouflage.
I wonder what they're up to.
Oh, Cassandra said, realization dawning on her face. They must be here for the open contract.
There's an open contract? Jason asked. I must have missed it while I was out in the Delta.
Yes, there's actually been some excitement. Two rather brazen robberies.
Robberies?
Yes. The first was in the theater district. Someone snatched a rather valuable piece of jewelry right off the neck of someone attending a play, then made a run for it. It was some cousin of the Duke of Greenstone, no less.
That's certainly bold.
That's only the beginning, she said. A man was attacked right here at the concert hall. He was out on a balcony during the interval when he was attacked and robbed of all his valuables. I know the man in question, and he rather had it coming, but still.
The same thief?
So it would seem, Cassandra said. In both cases, it was a woman dressed all in black. The interesting part is, given the people involved, they were able to get a sense of her aura. She only has a single essence, yet managed to escape both times.
That seems wildly reckless, Jason said.
I can't imagine the reward to be commensurate to that kind of risk. It certainly does raise questions, Cassandra said. The Duke of Greenstone had the Adventure Society put out an open contract for her capture, but the Adventure Society director restricted it to iron rank.
Why?
It's the long-standing policy of the Society to send appropriate measures to deal with appropriate problems, and it is one person with only a single essence. That's a widespread policy, not just here in Greenstone. Of course, the local powers have never had much time for Adventure Society strictures and have been vocal in their displeasure. They don't like that the director worked her way up from poverty instead of coming from the established families. They've also learned that pushing her does not tend to go well.
I see.
Have you met Elspeth Arella yet?
I have, Jason said. In fact, it was just before I met you.
Lucian Lamprey stormed through the grounds of Clarissa Ventress's estate. The silver-ranked director of the Magic Society practically blasted away her guards with the power of his aura, using it to announce his arrival. Ventress came out to meet him in the garden, sending her people off with a gesture. She grimaced as she fell under the suppression of his aura.
"To what do I owe the pleasure, Director Lamprey?" she asked, voice strained.
"She's meant to get caught," Lamprey said, "not cause a huge ruckus and get away."
"Director, I can assure you this is the way that meets both our needs."
"Do you realize how many eyes are on this now?"
"With respect, Director, I think you may be missing the point," she said. "You need to start attending more social events."
"Do you want me to catch her myself?"
"No, Director. But given your widely known patronage of the fortress and its fighting arena, you would, of course, recognize her aura. Should she make an appearance at an event you attend, of course, a civic-minded gentleman like yourself would reveal her identity. After that, the hunt begins and you have a seamless pretext for taking an interest in subsequent legal proceedings."
Lucian frowned as he thought it over. Ventress was visibly relieved as his aura retracted.
Where is she hitting next?
Even I don't know that, Ventress said. Keeping each element isolated allows us to control the information. As you said, there are many eyes on this.
Lamprey looked dissatisfied, but gave a reluctant nod.
My patience is not infinite, Ventress.
But it will be rewarded, Director.
Lamprey departed, leaving Ventress alone in the garden. Fury filled her face as she spat at a bush, which withered and blackened, letting off an acrid smoke.
Darnell! She called out,
and her Leonid bodyguard came quickly.
Belinda and Sophie, Ventress said venomously. Where are they? After the last time you called them in, they holed up somewhere, Darnell told her. If you made it known their protection was withdrawn, they'd be flushed out quickly enough.
No, Ventress said, regaining her usual composure. Make inquiries, but keep it discreet. So long as they get caught, everything works out.
What if they tell the authorities that you were behind it all?
Lamprey will keep a lid on that, Ventress said. So long as he gets what he wants, he'll want to make use of us again. His backing will make us untouchable in Old City.
Chapter 71 A Bit of Poo. Jason didn't normally wear his battle robe around the city, but he was on the job. He had been assigned his first contract within the city itself, and was meeting a contact at what was apparently a famous tavern in Old City. It was located in a district named Cavendish, after a family whose interests once dominated the area. The family had long since relocated to the island, but the name remained. There was a bulk trade center for goods coming in from the Delta, one of several locations from which the bulk of Old City's food was distributed. To accommodate the lodging needs of traders and teamsters, many inns and taverns were to be found nearby. After dark, it was a center for Old City nightlife. The raucous activity of the night had no impact on the bustling day trade, Jason noted, making his way through crowded streets in search of his destination. The buildings around him were the usual desert stone, although most had some manner of wall treatment that had been painted in bright colors. The same could be seen anywhere in Old City. But in Cavendish, it was prominent. This was especially true of the central thoroughfare, whose uncoordinated clash of colors earned it the moniker Rainbow Road. Jason turned off that main street in what he believed was the right direction. He stopped at a public pump, where people were lined up to draw water. Unlike on the island, only the wealthiest residents of Old City had magic-driven indoor plumbing. Most residents used communal facilities, like bathhouses, group toilets, and public water pumps. Underneath Old City, water from the Delta ran through an elaborate network of tunnels. Ultimately, it all emerged from drains into the artificial strait between Old City and the island. All through Old City, that water was drawn up, used, then the wastewater was siphoned off to processing hubs spaced across the city. There, waste material was extracted before returning the purified water to the tunnels under the city. Waste material was collected in bags and sold as fertilizer. To Jason, the tunnels sounded like sewers, whatever he had heard about magical cleaning processes. Given that his current contract involved heading into those tunnels, it was suddenly a more pressing concern. The public water pump Jason approached, like others around the city, drew up water that was magically cleaned to safe standards. There were a few people in line for the pump to fill up jars, bottles, or even whole barrels that would need to be moved by cart. Jason was about to ask the people for directions when his aura sensors picked something up. He projected his aura harmlessly over the gathered people, who all turned to look at him. He took out his Adventure Society badge and held it up.
"I'm an adventurer," Jason announced. "About to do some adventurer things, so please clear the area."
Most people knew the mortality rate of going near adventurers at work. They picked up their buckets and jugs and handcart and made themselves scarce. Soon it was just Jason and the five iron rank auras he had sensed.
"You may as well come out," Jason said.
"I think he noticed us boys,"
an arrogant voice said, its owner emerging from an alley with four others. They were young, with the light and practical armor of adventurers. They were all carrying wooden clubs and had recording crystals over their heads.
"I don't know, Dink," one of them said, voice full of reluctance. "You felt that aura. Maybe he isn't as weak as you said."
"Of course he is," Dink said, the first one who had spoken. "Is there something I can help you gentlemen with?" Jason asked.
"Yeah," Dink said. "You can shut up and take a beating. I'll allow some whimpering."
"Did I do something to offend you?" Jason asked.
"Is it the handsomeness?"
"You might be ugly now, but just keep working on those essences and you'll eventually get less awful looking. It'll never be great with what you have as a starting point, let's be honest, but it's magic, not miracles. Actually, have you tried the Goddess of Beauty? They probably wouldn't let you in the church looking like that, would they?"
"Are you seriously mouthing off right now?" Dink asked. "How smart will that mouth be with no teeth in it?"
"I'm not sure you know how being smart works," Jason said. "Or teeth."
"Dink," the doubter spoke up again. "If he was as weak as you said, I think he'd be more scared."
"You should listen to your friend, Dink," Jason said.
"I know all about you, Asano," Dink said. "That Geller lady set up a fight so you could beat all her fancy trainees, teach them a lesson or some crap. But the whole thing was rigged, and really, you're weak. But since you beat those Gellers, people don't know that yet. Someone is going to make a reputation kicking the crap out of you, and it's going to be us."
Jason let out a weary sigh. "All right, gentlemen," he said. "Do you want to do this with powers or without? I suggest without, because at least you get to limp away after you wake up. I don't think the Adventure Society will like it if I kill you all. To be honest, though, Dink, the more you talk, the more it seems worth the trouble."
"You think you can bluff your way out?" Dink asked. "I don't need powers to beat you."
"Just that stick, then," Jason said.
"I'm going to shove this thing down your throat," Dink said, waving his club.
He charged at Jason, then found himself on the ground, unsure of how he got there. Jason was standing above him, holding his club. "You get that one, Dink," Jason said. "Come at me again, and you pay in screams." Dink scrambled to his feet, lunging at Jason immediately. Jason rapped him on the head with his own club, arresting his momentum. Jason tossed aside the club and grabbed Dink's arm, yanking him off balance. The first scream came as Jason tried to bend Dink's elbow the wrong way. The second, when he did the same with the knee. The scream stopped as knuckles crushed Dink's throat. Then he lost consciousness shortly after seeing a knee coming at his face. Jason let Dink fall to the ground, looking over at the others, all clustered together. "I have a contract to get to," Jason said. "Either all of you get over here and fight, or take this idiot and go." The doubter dropped his club to the ground, the others doing the same. Jason shook his head. "How did you idiots collect 15 essences between you?" Jason asked. He'd heard Rufus and others say the local adventurer standard was low, but he hadn't really seen it. Most of the iron rank adventurers he'd seen were Gellers. "You'd best get this idiot a potion," Jason said, prodding Dink with his foot. "Oh, and where can I find a tavern called the Townhouse?" The Townhouse, as it turned out, was the largest building in Cavendish. Once the city residence of the Cavendish family, that time was long past. It had been an inn and tavern for almost 200 years. Entering through the large doors, Jason arrived in what was a surprisingly well-appointed barroom. Quality wood was a rare resource in Greenstone, but in the Townhouse, it was everywhere. From the polished floor to the wall booths, from the tables and chairs to the long bar. The windows were pristine glass, and elaborate chandeliers hung from the high ceiling, the magic crystals bathing the room in warm light. The only place heavily featuring the stone that normally dominated Greenstone construction was the split staircase at the back of the room. Made from dark and expensive green marble, it offered passage to the higher reaches of the building in style. The patrons were few in the early morning, just a few people quietly enjoying meals alone or in pairs. They were better dressed than the average old city resident, as was the man behind the bar. He was a member of the runic race, stocky and hairless, with blue-black skin. On his skin were the glowing runes for which his race was named, holes in his outfit designed to show them off. Jason had interacted with his people very little, as they weren't common to Greenstone. He was packing away clean glasses in preparation for the evening. He glanced up at Jason when he walked over.
"Hello, sir," the barman greeted. "Am I to take it from your attire that you are the adventurer?"
"Jason Asano, at your service. Are you the owner?"
"The owner isn't in right now. She will be grateful for your prompt arrival," the barman said. "If I may ask, is it Mr. Asano, Master Asano, or Lord Asano?"
"Stick to Jason, and we'll do just fine."
"Very good, sir. My name is Farrok. Allow me to lead you to the other gentleman, who is already in the cellar."
Farrok led Jason behind the bar and through a door that led downwards. They arrived at a sprawling cellar. Jason reminisced about the Vane estate and the cellar where he had once woken up inside a cage. It hadn't been his best moment, but it was where he first met Rufus, Gary, and Farrah. That cellar had been empty, cages aside, while this one contained rows of massive barrels on huge racks. It looked like the storeroom of a whiskey distillery. There was a man already in the cellar, kneeling down near a brick wall. He was peering into a hole, large enough that he could have put his head through it and apparently chewed straight through the masonry. There was a glowing magical barrier inside an arch of runes carved into the wall around the hole. The man looked up at Jason. He looked around 50, wearing loose coveralls and a workman's cap. He had a tool belt, in which Jason could see implements both magical and non-magical in nature. From the outfit, Jason took him as the kind of highly skilled tradesman with training in the magical aspects of his job. His aura revealed no essences. His expertise was wholly in external magic. Jason's magical knowledge, coming from a skill book, was more extensive than the narrow, specialized training of such a workman. That said, Jason had no illusions he would be the equal of this tradesman in his specialized field. Jason's magically imbued knowledge might be more comprehensive, but he knew it would pale in comparison to the workman's years of experience. The man introduced himself as Frank.
"I've chased them all back into this hole here, Mr. Farrok," Frank said.
"It's Farrok."
"Sorry about that, Mr. Farrok. So once I got them all out, I sealed the hole off. It'll keep them long enough for Mr. Asano here to do his job. You much of a rat chaser, Mr. Asano?"
"I guess we'll find out," Jason said. The Adventure Society was not normally called in for lesser monsters, which posed a limited threat. Only in large numbers were they a problem that required Adventure Society intervention. In this case, a whole colony of stone-chewer rats had appeared in the tunnels underneath Old City.
"I was told you would provide access to the tunnels?" Jason asked Frank as Farrok led them upstairs.
"Yeah, but I'll have to leave you down there," Frank said. "This place isn't the only one with holes in the basement. You're not afraid of the dark, are you, Mr. Asano?"
"I'm sure I'll muddle through."
Frank led them out of the building and down a side street, to a set of stone stairs in an alleyway that led down below street level to a metal door. Frank unlocked the door, revealing more stairs. Jason followed Frank down into what looked like a sewer tunnel. The ceiling was arched, dark water running down the middle, with walkways on either side. There was a chemical smell, heavy in the wet air. It wasn't exactly like chlorine, but similar.
"You all right for light?" Frank asked. "I can lend you a glowstone if that'd help."
"Wouldn't the rats run from the light?" Jason asked.
"Oh, you see a lot of critters like this in my kind of work," Frank said. "My experience has been more of a run-towards situation. They'll take a nibble out of you if they can, believe me. Your trouble will be the ones hidden away. There's pipes and crevices aplenty down here. Lots of places to nest that people won't fit into."
"I'm going to let my familiar do the hard work."
"That's like a magic pet, yeah?" Frank asked. "Not sure I want my dog running around down here. I mean, they clean this water, but there's clean and there's clean, you know?"
"My familiar is an apocalypse monster that can scour a world of life," Jason said absently as he looked around the tunnel. "It isn't going to be put off by a bit of poo."
"Sounds fancy,"
Frank said. I don't know much about apology monsters or whatever, but I suppose the big knobs wouldn't have sent you if you weren't up to it. You know, we had an infestation like this not long after I started on the job. Weren't cleaned out properly, and you know how monsters get after a bit? Streaming out of the street drains they were, terrorising regular folk. That was some kind of bug instead of rats, but I imagine it'd be much the same. You just be short and get them all, yeah?
I'll do that, Frank.
Right, well, I'll leave you to it and get on sealing up these basements. After that, I'll come back and hang about until you're ready to go. How long do you reckon you'll be?
That depends on the rats.
Fair enough, Frank said. Just try not to get lost. These tunnels all look the same. If you ain't back here come dark, I'll assume you got lost and come find you.
Frank closed the door, leaving Jason in the dark. But his vision power was more than up to the task. Taking out a knife, he sliced open his palm, letting leeches pile out of the wound. Colin wasn't likely to go causing any apocalypses quite yet, but the neophyte life devourer did have the power to sense out living things wherever they might be hiding. The sanguine horror wasn't fast, but it was multitudinous, and as Jason followed the main mass, small groups of leeches broke off to head down tunnels and gaps. Jason's quest might not end quickly, but he would root them all out in the end.
Chapter 72 Rat Race.
Stone chewer rats were around the size of house cats, with grey fur, protruding teeth, and oversized talon-like claws. Jason watched as a half dozen of them struggled to scratch away the leeches digging into their flesh. One writhed around until it fell into the water.
Colin, what did I say about letting them go in the water?
The rats, it turned out, were heavy, and after falling into the water, didn't come back up. The leeches on them had no such problems, crawling out after the rat had died of either the leech's ministrations or from drowning.
How am I meant to loot them down there? The ones hidden away in those nests are one thing, but this is throwing away money.
The rats were all dead, and all the nearby leeches crawled back into a pile. Jason looked at it.
I'm sorry, Colin, Jason said. You're doing all the work, and here I am complaining. I know you're doing your best, buddy. Good job.
The leech pile started undulating, with what Jason assumed was happiness. He pulled up the quest screen.
Quest. Contract. Rat infestation. Rats have infested the water tunnels underneath the Cavendish district of Old City. Clear out the nests and eliminate all the rats. Objective. Clear out rats' nests. 5 of 6. Objective. Eliminate stone chewer rats. 31 of 44.
One more nest to go. That's a lot of leftover rats for the last one. Or are the others roaming around loose? Jason was curious why some quests showed him the exact number of monsters when others didn't, but he wasn't going to complain. He pulled a pocket watch from his inventory and saw they were making good time. Colin might be slow, but its ability to sense life was unnerving. Looting the lesser monsters only produced lesser spirit coins, but they were welcome nonetheless. Most things were paid for in lesser coins, and it saved him using the money-changing services of a brokerage. Moving further into the tunnels, he followed Colin's leisurely lead. Jason noticed the change in Colin's behavior as they went further. Throughout the hunt, leeches had been breaking off in batches to seek out rats inside tunnels and various unreachable nooks. Now they were all slowly converging in the one direction.
One big nest it is, I guess.
Objective: eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 43. Jason looked at the message that popped up. Normally, it told him when he had progressed the objective, but he hadn't killed any more rats. He looked at it again.
The objective used to be 44 rats, he mused.
Did some old lady with a broom kill one?
Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 43. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 42. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 41. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 40. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 39.
What's going on here?
Quest, contract, rat infestation.
hidden objective discovered. Find the secret of the final rat nest, 0 of 1. Quest cannot be completed until all hidden objectives are completed.
All hidden objectives? There's more.
Jason wanted to pick up the pace, but without Colin leading the way, he could easily go off track in the maze of tunnels. He considered for a moment, then lowered his hand close to the ground. The cut on his palm was still there, as his rapid regeneration only worked while the familiar was inhabiting his bloodstream. The leeches crawled into his hand, vanishing as they touched his blood. He wondered if he should have washed them first. Finally, only one leech was left, sitting in his hand.
All right, Colin, lead the way.
Jason moved forwards at a brisker pace, hand held out in front of him. Holding Colin out in front of him, he could move his hand side to side. The leech would rear up when Jason was holding it in the right direction, letting him find the right path at every junction. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 38. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 37. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 36.
Is someone killing them off? What do you think, Colin? Is it going to be super easy?
No, I don't think so either. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 35. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 34. Colin pointed Jason at a tunnel that looked like it hadn't seen maintenance in a long time. Mortar was loose, bricks had fallen out of the walls. All the tunnels were wet, but here some kind of fungus was growing, in places almost completely obstructing the path.
That is a lot of fungus.
Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 33. Objective, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 32.
If I were being honest, Colin, I'd admit to becoming a little concerned.
Quest, contract, rat infestation. Objective complete, eliminate stone chewer rats, 31 of 31. Quest cannot be completed until all hidden objectives are complete.
Hidden objectives, Jason grumbled. I'd better get some solid loot for this.
He looked at Colin in his hand.
Yes, I know. Other adventurers don't get a quest system. Shut up.
A sound, a low rumble, came rolling through the tunnel.
What do you think, Colin? The sound of a hidden objective?
The rumble grew louder and clearer. It wasn't an earthy sound, but a sloshing. The water flowing through the middle of the tunnel started running faster and higher, splashing against the brick walkway.
Ah, crap.
Water came surging down the tunnel, raising the water level and overrunning the walkway. Jason stood still as the water rose halfway to his knees, not wanting to be knocked over.
This isn't good water, Jason said. Is this stuff going to clear out?
The surge of water passed, dropping back to its normal level. Jason guessed it to be a normal function of water tunnel operations. Jason took a few unhappy, squelching steps, then was struck by a horrible revelation.
Oh, bloody hell, he exclaimed, slapping a hand into his face. I totally forgot I can walk on water.
He continued down the tunnel, squelching boots, accompanied by a stream of grumbling.
I see you did just fine, Jason said to the leech, still in his hand.
Then he noticed a circular welt.
Did you try to eat me while I was distracted?
The leech waggled its toothy maw back and forth innocently.
Don't act nonchalant with me, Colin, Jason said, and after I gave you all that blood pudding yesterday.
Continuing on, Jason paused as he heard scurrying from somewhere ahead. It sounded loud for a rat, even the oversized stone chewer rats. In any case, all the stone chewer rats were gone. The sound got closer, and a rattling came rushing out of a side junction.
Quest, contract, rat infestation, hidden objective discovered. Eliminate, rattlings, 0 of 12. Quest cannot be completed until all hidden objectives are completed.
Rattlings looked like mice, but stood on their hind legs, half the height of a human. They were also cowardly, usually running from any confrontation, but this one didn't even slow down as it approached. It tried to barrel past Jason, but bounced off, tumbling from the walkway and into the water. Unable to swim, it splashed about ineffectually as the water flow carried it away. Jason pulled a knife from his inventory, cutting into his hand, sending blood and leeches splashing into the water after it. The rest he let pile at his feet.
Make sure it doesn't survive,
he told the leeches, then started off down the tunnel it had emerged from. Whatever the rattling had been running from apparently filled it with more fear than Jason had.
Too bad the monsters didn't see me in the Mirage Arena.
Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 0 of 11.
This again? I don't think there's an old lady with a broom killing rattlings.
He heard squeals of fear coming from further down the tunnel. 5 more rattlings came scrambling out of the tunnel, rushing towards Jason. This time he was ready, smashing one into the wall with a low kick as he grabbed another by the throat. They were weak and cowardly creatures, and he ended both quickly. Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 2 of 11. The other 3 made it past him. 2 of them tried leaping over the water to the opposite walkway, but only 1 made it. The other fell short, splashing into the channel. The 3rd one dashed past Jason as he killed the 1st 2, leaping over the pile of leeches.
What kind of effort was that? Jason asked Colin. Now I have to go running after them. Go catch that other swimmer.
As leeches piled into the water, he chased the other 2. He started with the 1 on his own side of the tunnel, letting out just enough light from his cloak to turn the pitch dark into shadowy gloom. He shadow-jumped ahead of the creature, grabbing it as it ran right into him. A quick knife slash, and it was done.
Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 3 of 11.
That other prick has run right off. Dropping the light down to nothing again so it wouldn't see him coming, he started hunting it down, which took the better part of an hour. He took solace that the leeches had used the time to catch up with the 2 rattlings that had fallen in the water. In the meantime, another pair of rattlings had mysteriously vanished.
Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 6 of 9.
Jason took stock as leeches crawled back out of the water at his feet. There were 3 rattlings left. He set off, Colin lagging behind. He didn't slow down, leaving Colin to follow as best it could.
3 to go.
Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 6 of 8.
All right, 2 to go. Some kind of monster suicide pact? Did the ones running away chicken out and refuse to drink the punch?
Pausing at another junction, he wasn't sure which way to go. A sudden squeal of fear and pain gave him a path. The sound didn't last long.
Hidden objective, eliminate rattlings, 6 of 7.
Jason moved in the direction of the suddenly cut off screaming. Chapter 73. A Grim Sword to Live By. Jason was heading down the tunnel towards where he had heard the screaming. A bellowing roar came from the same direction, but it definitely wasn't made by a rattling. Jason moved forward, taking care with the wet stone of the walkway and the slimy fungus underfoot. He was still in complete darkness. At a junction ahead, a rattling sprinted out. Some kind of tentacle snaked after it, wrapping around its ankle. The rattling tripped and was dragged, squealing, back into the tunnel. Jason raced forwards to catch a look at the rattling's fate. What he saw was something like a rat version of Gary, complete with huge muscular frame and body covered in fur. It was so big it was standing astride the water, rushing through the middle of the tunnel, 1 foot each on the walkways either side. Standing upright, it was so tall it almost scraped the arch of the tunnel with its head. Its body was much more human-shaped than a rattling's, which made its nakedness more obvious.
You need to put that thing away, mate.
Quest. Contract. Rat infestation. Hidden objective complete. Find the secret of the final rat nest. 1 of 1. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Hidden objective discovered. Eliminate the rat gorger. 0 of 1. Quest cannot be completed until all hidden objectives are complete. The rat monster roared at Jason. It had the head of a rat, except the mouth was larger, its face almost unhinging to reveal jagged teeth like a shark's. It had small, darting eyes which stared straight at Jason in spite of the total darkness. Dangling in front of the monster, held up by the monster's long tail, was the rattling it had dragged away. The rat monster's tail was meters long, thick, ropey, and prehensile. It was more than capable of capturing and delivering prey, strong enough to suspend the rattling for the monster to bite into. There was a slurping noise as the rattling withered away. Like sucking the juices out through a straw, the monster drained the rattling to little more than skin and bones. Quest,
Contract, rat infestation. Objective complete. Eliminate rattlings, 6 of 6. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Quest cannot be completed until all hidden objectives are complete.
Rat gorger, Jason said as he watched in disgust.
The name makes sense. It dropped the dead rattling into the water, where it floated past Jason. He looked at the withered remains as they drifted down the tunnel.
This must be what it's like to fight me.
The rat gorger licked its lips with a long tongue that sought out any leftover rattling fluids around its huge maw. Its body rippled and bulged. Jason watched its already powerful form grow bigger and stronger in front of his eyes.
So that's what you're up to, Jason said. Sacrifice rattling to get +1 strength.
The creature started lumbering forward. Jason didn't want to wind up in the creature's clawed hands, but that wasn't a large concern. The extra growth had made it almost too big for the tunnel, and it was forced to shuffle along with a foot on either side of the waterway. It was slow, awkward, and ponderous. Exactly Jason's kind of enemy. The only element that worried Jason was the tail, which lashed out in his direction. As quick as the rest of the monster was slow, it snaked around Jason's waist. It pulled him off his feet and started dragging him towards the monster. Jason took his knife and dragged it heavily across the tail. The monster roared, freeing Jason as it yanked its tail back. Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on Rat Gorger. Jason kicked back up onto his feet, one of the benefits of all his training. He couldn't use his shadow teleport in total darkness, so he produced tiny motes of light from his cloak, sending them floating up and down the tunnel. He kept the illumination at a minimum, transforming the darkness into a playground of shadows. The rat gorger continued its slow, hulking approach. The tail snapped forwards again, this time lashing out like a whip, instead of trying to wrap around him. Jason lacked the reflexes to intercept it, so he vanished and the tail hit nothing but air. Appearing behind the monster, he slashed out with his dagger, cutting into the immobile base of the tail. Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on Rat Gorger. Special attack, Punish, has inflicted sin on Rat Gorger. The monster swung back with a huge arm, but Jason had already teleported back to his previous position.
All right, mate, Jason said.
How dumb are you? The tail whipped out again with the exact same result. Jason jumped behind it and slashed the same spot at the base of the tail, severing the tail entirely. Weapon, Nightfang, has inflicted umbral snake venom on Rat Gorger. Special attack, Leech Bite, has inflicted bleeding on Rat Gorger. Jason shadow jumped out of range as the creature went wild, thrashing about itself impotently as it roared in rage and pain.
Pretty dumb then, Jason said. Works for me.
In its mindless fury, the monster stumbled, tumbling into the water. It was far too big to be pulled along in the current, the channel only submerging it to the waist. Putting a huge hand on walkways beside it, it pulled itself out of the water. While it did so, Jason watched from a safe distance. With the severing of the prehensile tail, the main source of danger for Jason was gone. As he watched the monster push itself upright, he chanted out a spell.
Your fate is to suffer.
Spell, Inexorable Doom, has inflicted Inexorable Doom on Rat Gorger. The monster was tough, but with Jason's afflictions in place, its death was inevitable. He led it up the tunnel, the creature bellowing its rage at Jason as it sluggishly, hopelessly pursued. It struggled along as its blood poured from the stump of its tail and its flesh blackened with necrosis. It toughed it out surprisingly well until it crossed paths with the leeches that had finally caught up to Jason. Misery and pain finally overwhelmed its rage as it met a terrible, pitiful end, screams of pain and helplessness marking its passage into death. Quest, contract, rat infestation. Hidden objective complete. Eliminate the rat gorger, 1 of 1. Rat essence has been added to your inventory. Objective complete. Clear out rat nests, 6 of 6. Quest complete. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory.
Hey, an essence. Rat essence. Appropriate, but not what I would have picked.
Animal-type essences were common, as much as any essences were common.
Some, like bear, wolf, and snake, were quite prized, while others were less so. He didn't hold high hopes for the rat essence, but he should be able to trade it for several of the more common awakening stones. Jason walked over to the dead monster.
Why couldn't it have been the mite essence? Jason asked it.
Some essences were common as animal essences, yet were more valuable due to their desirability. The mite essence, the shield essence, or the magic essence could all have been traded for some quality awakening stones.
As your life was mine to reap, your death is mine to harvest.
The red glow of the monster's remnant life force emerged from its body, streaming up into Jason's outstretched hand. The monster's body withered to a dried-out husk. It looked a lot like the rattling the monster itself had drained.
Live by the sword, die by the sword, isn't it, mate?
Actually, I hope not. I live by a pretty grim sword. He lightly touched the corpse, then backed away before it dissolved into smoke. 10 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Awakening Stone of Wrath has been added to your inventory. Jason took in a sharp breath.
Boss drops! Now we're talking.
He pulled out the Awakening Stone immediately. It was the same round, palm-sized crystal as other Awakening Stones. Inside was a burning, shifting red, wreathed in white-gold light. Item, Awakening Stone of Wrath, unranked, uncommon. An Awakening Stone that unlocks the power of Wrath. Consumable, Awakening Stone. Requirements, unawakened essence ability. Effect, awakens an essence ability. You have 8 unawakened essence abilities. You are able to absorb Awakening Stone of Wrath. Absorb? Yes, no. As much as he wanted to use it, he put the stone away for the moment. After reabsorbing Colin, he was about to leave when he heard an echoing voice.
Hello? It called out. Anyone down there?
Frank? Jason called back.
Oh, Mr. Arsenault!
Frank's voice came down from somewhere above. It sounded like he was talking through a pipe or very narrow tunnel.
Where are you?
Jason called out.
Up on the street, Frank called down. There were some pretty loud monster noises coming up through the drains, and the folk up here were getting a bit worried. After it went quiet, I thought I may as well see if anyone was alive down there.
It was just a rat, Jason called up. It's dead now.
That didn't sound like any rat I've seen.
It was a big rat.
I thought you might not have made it, Frank said. There were some pretty awful sounds of misery and dying at the end there. Thought that might have been you.
It kind of was, Frank, Jason said. That's the sound things make when I happen to them. Can you find me the closest way back up to the street?
Yes, sir, Mr. Asano, sir,
he said, having mysteriously learned to pronounce Jason's name correctly.
I'll have you out in no time.
Chapter 74. Doing Better. The balcony of Jason's suite was not as expansive as the one Rufus, Farah, and Gary shared, but it was still more than large enough to put out a reclining lounger. Being on the opposite side of the building, Jason's balcony looked over the street instead of the water. The sound of the Guild District's bustling daytime activity came in through the balcony doors as Jason opened them up. He was ready for a lazy afternoon, with a colourful short-sleeved shirt and loose knee-length shorts. He lay back comfortably, pulling a small red-gold crystal from his inventory. Item, Awakening Stone of Wrath, unranked, uncommon. An Awakening Stone that unlocks the power of Wrath, consumable, Awakening Stone. Requirements, unawakened essence ability. Effect, awakens an essence ability. You have 8 unawakened essence abilities. You are able to absorb Awakening Stone of Wrath. Absorb? Yes, no.
Time to see what you have for me.
Jason was about to absorb the Awakening Stone when there was a knock on the door. Jason groaned, putting the stone away and getting up from the lounger. He made his way back inside and opened the door.
Humphrey, Jason said. I haven't seen you in a while. Come on in.
As Humphrey came inside, Jason noticed his body language was uncertain and uncomfortable, and he was uncharacteristically quiet. Humphrey normally moved with confidence and was quick with the verbal niceties.
Something the matter? Jason asked, as he directed Humphrey into a comfortable chair.
Jason. Humphrey was hesitant, but carried on.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
Can you not answer the question with a question?
Is something bothering you, Humphrey?
I watched you fight the other day in the Mirage Arena.
Jason chuckled.
I'm not sure anyone was expecting that, Jason said. Even me. Your mother gave me way too many advantages.
Do trap weavers really show up in numbers like that?
During the monster surge they do, Humphrey said. The last surge was when I was a boy, but a whole army of them got into family grounds. Walls don't stop something that climbs the way they do.
Wow. You couldn't have been more than 6 or 7.
How are you all right with what you did to them? Rick and the others, I mean.
Ah, Jason said, leaning back in his chair. You're concerned about the way I fought them.
We were watching you, from the viewing room, Humphrey said. Watching them, really. We didn't see that much of you. What we did see, what we heard. The way you took Hannah and Henry while they were distracted. That laughter as you mocked them from the darkness. It was chilling. What you did to Hannah's body, draping her body off a monster's webs like a decoration.
What do you think about what I did to them? Humphrey sat up in his chair, shaking his head.
You always do this. I ask you about something that seems questionable, but when I question it, you just question me back. Instead of defending what you did, you just talk and talk as if right and wrong are whatever you want them to be if you explain them enough.
Jason sighed.
You know, I've been where you are, Jason said. A lot more recently than I'd like. I accused a friend of mine of having an immoral perspective on adventuring without ever having been an adventurer myself. You're making the same mistake I did, not seeing my perspective any more than I did hers.
Jason gave Humphrey a friendly but tired smile.
I know this is coming from a good place, Jason said. You have this certainty about right and wrong, and you don't want a friend going down a bad path. I'm not going to sit here and say that you're wrong to do that, but not everything is as simple as it seems from the outside.
Some things are just right and wrong, Jason.
Sure, Jason said, but the consequences of our actions aren't always what we want them to be.
Humphrey, let me put a hypothetical situation to you.
You're going to make things complicated again, aren't you?